The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to this 820 AM The Word broadcast special, Heart of the City. Pastors, ministry leaders, and churches have received a call to serve their communities with the love and compassion of Christ. The call is from God's heart to the heart of the city.
This is Heart of the City. I'm Chuck Olmstead, the Director of Local Ministry Development for 820 AM The Word. My special guest today is Bill Salas. He's the best-selling author, a researcher, conference speaker, and he's with ProphecyDepot.com. Bill, thank you for joining me today on Heart of the City.
Chuck, it's great to be on your program. Thank you.
Well, you and I just met about 10 minutes ago, and I was reading your bio, and I thought, I want to interview this guy.
Well, yes, and I'm honored to be on the program.
Well, thank you. Well, one of the things that caught my eye is you've done some work with Jan Markell, who's one of our programmers on KGNW, and so you've experienced her ministry.
Yeah, it's always a treat to be on her program. She covers all these diversified topics, and of course, my specialty is the prophecy, Bible prophecy. But she'll have me on with someone like Brigitte Gabriel, a Fox News correspondent, or Michelle Bachmann, or something like that. So it's a treat to be on her program.
Right. Well, I like to always go back because the heart of this ministry, heart of the city, is to learn about how people came to faith, and then out of that experience, how they came to do what they do in their life and ministry. So let's go back. Since you and I have just met, where were you born? What's your experience as a young man?
Well, I was born in Long Beach, California, and I lived in Anaheim, California.
Uh-huh.
Anaheim is infamous for Disneyland.
Right.
And it used to be a bunch of orange groves when I was younger, but now it's part of Orange County. It's a big city. And then I got married to my wife in 1974. We'll be celebrating our 44th anniversary this August. And we've got three adult children and three grandchildren. And so that's my greatest notes on my resume, on my bio. I greatly appreciate my wife for hanging in there, because when you hear my testimony, you're going to wonder why she did.
Well, but what is your testimony? What was life like back for you, teenager growing up, and what was your spiritual formation?
Well, I was bad. I was just a hippie, did bad things, drugs, things like that.
Well, California really... in the late 60s, early 70s, I get it, right? There's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, and, you know, my parents were not. They were wonderful parents, although I came from a split household. And I went to some of the Sunday schools because the bus would come pick us up, and I'd learn about Noah or, you know, Daniel. But that was not really, I would say, a Christian household per se. It certainly didn't stick with me. And so I was pretty much an agnostic, and I was a piano player. I worked really hard to be a very good piano player. When we got married, my wife and I went to the Hawaiian Islands. We lived on the island of Kauai. And I played piano there with bands and stuff for the hotels, and was very prolific. Would work hard every morning, practice for 2 or 3 hours to be proficient. And then over time, and became successful there, I got a finger disease, and it became incurable. We saw doctors, I saw many doctors, became very disenfranchised with, you know, medicine. They said, well, listen, we can give you these pills, but it won't necessarily go away. We'll just try to bring some relief. And I got very concerned. I didn't want to keep taking pills. I was pretty, you know, healthy at the time, out in the water all the time, surfing and things like that in the Hawaiian Islands. So I started getting into holistic healing. Mm-hmm. One of the guitar players was into yoga. And so I got into vegetarianism. I became a string bean. I was about 140 pounds. And, you know, and then I broke out in boils all over my body. Things were really bad, going from worse to worse. I would play piano with three bloody fingers on each hand. You know, my keys would be stained with blood, and that was all I knew how to do. So I got into that aspect of you know, holistic healing, and then I got that led into yoga, into being a yogi. I started studying Hinduism. I became what's called a Kriya Yogi, and learned how to do meditation and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really a bad situation. Of course, they believe in reincarnation and all of the false gods. You know, there's almost a different god for every day on the calendar. And then ultimately, I went from there to a worse situation. I got involved in a cult by a guy who claimed to be Jesus Christ. And, of course, I didn't know any better. He did manipulating things that looked like miracles and sucked quite a few of us into this cult in the Hawaiian Islands. And
what year was this?
This was around 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born in 1953. And so we got really, it was a bad, bad situation. All the things you'd hear about a cult, you know, were capable in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife got dragged into it, and she was kind of coerced because he would threaten our children. We had two children at the time. And she was molested, and she was treated very poorly, and I didn't know that, but I was so brainwashed. I'll be honest with you, I'm not certain I would have known what to do. I mean, you know, that's how bad it was.
What attracted you to the cult?
Well, I was very vulnerable due to spirituality because of my healing crisis,
mm-hmm.
which at that point has gone away. You know, the boils were gone, the finger, I was playing music again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just vulnerable. And if you don't know Jesus Christ, you are vulnerable. Spirituality in a crisis is a very vulnerable position for somebody. You're easily manipulated. And,
Because your heart's open, right? I mean, there's this openness yet, but without the truth.
Yeah, you're looking for answers at that mm-hmm. point and remedy to your predicament.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's very important to understand Christianity. Of course, as you know, I'm a Christian now. You know, once you understand Jesus, who he really is, the Gospels and things like that, now you wouldn't be a victim, an easy victim, to fall prey to something like that. I wish I would have known what I know now back then. But it dragged my wife and my two children, I've had another child since then,
mm-hmm.
Through a terrible situation. And then ultimately the cult leader got exposed. And I came back from Hawaii to the mainland, to California with my wife. She stuck with me. Our two children, we tried to recover, but I went immediately into denial. I did not want to talk about it. I didn't want to have anything to do with anything called God. So I finished my business degree, and we moved to Big Bear Lake, California, which is a ski resort community a couple hours east of Los Angeles, and we opened a mortgage company. And we did very successfully. It was a great time. America was refinancing itself. Home sales were great. This was around 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And we opened three different companies. You know, we spread throughout the whole mountains. We were the biggest mortgage company. We became a very successful businessman at that point. And still not talking to my wife about what she'd been through, not interested in anything called God. And one of our offices where I was spending most of my time was sharing joining walls with the Calvary Chapel. It was in a retail center, strip center. And I got to know the pastor. It was about my age. And he invited me to start playing on the men's softball team, which I love to play baseball. So
right.
Went out and played softball with them. And after a while, I started realizing, well, these guys aren't as whacked as I thought or as crazy as I thought. They're normal guys, you know, because you have the stigma about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, who are these people? Right?
Right.
I don't want to become one. I've got to change my life, you know, this sort of thing. And so I became friends with these guys, and then the pastor came up to me and said, you know, we've got a gentleman up here named Chuck Missler, who's a Bible prophecy teacher, very well known in Bible prophecy circles. And Chuck Missler lived in Big Bear Lake at the time. And he said, he's going to be teaching on Monday nights on the book of Revelation. And you're a very analytical mind, Bill. Why don't you come in and listen to him?
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I closed my shop at 5 o'clock, walked across right next door, and sat in the same chair for weeks. And I heard Chuck Missler start to go through the book of Revelation. And I started to realize, wow, there's a God, and this God knows the end from the beginning. And that caught my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, this is the God I've been searching for. And I tested it. I mean, I would check the historical facts about the Babylonian captivity and the types of prophecies that had found fulfillment. Then realizing, well, the other ones will find fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I get into something, Chuck, I get obsessed. Every morning before I go to work, I'd get up about 4 in the morning and study the Bible for 2 or 3 hours. And then I'd go to work. And then my interest got more and more into Bible prophecy. Now, so ultimately I went to the church and got saved through this pastor, Mike Fulmer, at Calvary Chapel. And that was around 1990, 1991 is that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
They had a huge earthquake in Big Bear Lake. And Chuck Missler moved to Idaho. Mm-hmm. Now he's in New Zealand. And I panicked because I went, oh, no, what am I going to do? So I bought every one of his tapes and listened to him until I was blue in the face and started studying other guys. And but then when 9/11 happened, I started really turning my attention a lot toward Bible prophecy, trying to figure out, well, what is that about? You know, that terrorism is the ugly byproduct of the Arab-Israeli conflict, of which the Bible has a lot to say about. And 9/11 caught the church off guard. It caught the world off guard. And so I was trying to figure out, well, is there anything to understand here? And I really started getting into the Arab-Israeli conflict as in Psalm 83, which talks about this confederacy that wants to destroy the state of Israel and banish the name forever. And mm-hmm. I figured out who they were. And it turns out they're inner circle countries around Israel today, including the terrorist groups of Hezbollah and Palestinians. And so I started writing studies, sharing these studies, because it was vastly overlooked, this area.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were focusing on this prophecy called Ezekiel 38, this Gog and Magog invasion, which is a big deal.
Right.
Russia coming together with Iran and Turkey and nine members in this coalition are going to invade Israel, and it says in the latter days. And I was interested in that prophecy, but I thought, well, no, there's something else going on here that people are not catching. So I started sharing my notes with pastors and scholars, and they kept saying, well, keep writing, this is interesting, and so I did.
Because
mm-hmm. I thought I was out in right field. How come these guys didn't catch this stuff?
Right.
So ultimately, I wrote a book in 2008. I felt the Lord wanted me to write a book, which, you know, when I got saved being a musician and a businessman, I said, well, I'll help you, Lord. I'll serve you. I mean, what an honor to be in ministry. I'll do music. So I played on the worship team for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do business administration for a church, whatever. I had no idea I would be a writer. I don't have a journalism degree or anything like that.
Right.
So one of the lessons we'll stop right now and tell your audience is, God gives us talents. He gives us gifts. And, you know, a good parent will always try to see, well, what is the aptitude of my child? I want to develop it. Oh, he's a good piano player. I'll start working on music with him, whatever. But we have gifts God gave us that only he really knows what those gifts are.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be entirely different than what you think. But when you yield to him, he will bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got me now where I've written 6 books. I'm on the world stage. I travel internationally, do radio, TV. I've been on, you know, TBN, CNN, CBN, you know, mm-hmm. all those sort of things. So, I just write books about Bible prophecy at this point, and there's no shortage of things to talk about. And so that book was passed out to guys like Hal Lindsey and Chuck Missler and these guys, and they said, wow, you know, you need to write more, or you need to be on our radio shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing led to another, upgraded that book. That book was called Israelistein, The Ancient Blueprints of the Future Middle East. I upgraded it, answered all the objections people had, like, well, how can that psalm be a prophecy? How do we know that didn't already find fulfillment? How come that can't be part of Armageddon or part of Ezekiel 38? So I tried to address all those objections, took them seriously. Never want to stand before the Lord saying, have him say to you, well done, good and faithful servant, but
right.
you really messed up on that Psalm 83 book, right, mm-hmm. or something like that. So I took those things to heart, and I looked at them, and it just solidified my thinking and teaching in that area. And since that time, I've written, like I said, some more books and got DVDs that go with it. And at this point, my goal in Prophecy Depot Ministries is to take the complex information of Bible prophecy, which is about a third of the Bible, and try to simplify it so that the common man, woman, or child could understand it. Because Bible prophecy is not just for the scholarly, but for every man, woman, and child. God wants people to know, and it's like I said, it's about a third of the Bible. That's how important it is to God. He wants people to know what's coming. He wanted Noah to know there was a flood coming. He wanted Joseph to know there were 7 years of famine coming. He wanted Jeremiah to know that the southern kingdom was going to go into 7 years of captivity. And there are certain things that he wants us to know right now. And
yeah.
So that's what I'm busy about.
Well, you're listening to Heart of the City. I'm Chuck Olmstead, the Director of Local Ministry Development for 820 AM The Word, and our guest today is Bill Salas. He's with Prophecy Depot Ministries. Bill, I want to step back for a second, and as you were talking about your wife and your marriage and the hurt that she had experienced during the cult times, how did the Lord work in that situation in your lives?
Well, my wife was a true believer in Jesus Christ in the midst of all that. You would not really have necessarily known it, and she wasn't really raised in a Christian household, but she grew strong in the Lord. I mean, what survived her was her faith in Jesus Christ. And when we came back and I was in denial and we didn't want to talk about it, you know, our relationship was rocky. You know, we were working toward the end of raising our family. She's very committed. I mean, when she says her vows till death do us part, she means it.
Right.
I'm so blessed to have that wife. And, so we came back and we were hitting the skids, and at one point she was going to leave, and she was saying, "Look, Lord, I mean, I can't take it anymore. You know, if this guy doesn't get it, doesn't know who you are, and doesn't communicate with me, and we have a normal kind of growing relationship in you, then I'm out." And the very day she was ready to leave was the very day I got saved.
Wow.
And I didn't know she was having those prayers. I didn't know it was. Being in denial, I didn't realize how critically bad it was in the relationship, you know, being a foolish man. But she is just very special. And so that's how that went.
I think all of us, because you and I, we both got married in 1974, so it'll be 44 years for us in July. It's learning how to hear the heart of your wife and really listen and be sensitive to her, isn't it? That's so critical to a
Yeah, you know, sometimes when I'm teaching about the ancient Arab hatred of the Jewish people, I go way back to the time of the patriarchs and matriarchs. And, of course, there was a time when Sarah had a barren womb and Abraham, it was okay. It wasn't against their law at the time, or it wasn't immoral to take a concubine and get her impregnated, which was Hagar. And then the child would come out and be given to Sarah in that case, you know, the wife. And when Hagar got jealous and wanted to have her son be the child of promise instead of Isaac, ultimately it was Isaac, Sarah got angry and said, "Cast this bondwoman out." And the Lord said to Abraham, he said, and I often joke around and say, this is my wife's favorite verse, he says, "Listen to Sarah." Listen to what she, in other words, the Lord spoke through her to express his intent. And I think men need to realize, you know, that the Lord is going to communicate with us in the ways that he chooses. And in many cases, that's through our wives.
Exactly.
So
it's very, very, very true. Well, let's talk about prophecy for a minute. You don't know my background, but I grew up in a four-square church from Illinois. And the pastor that was my pastor and whom I'm actually named after, Charles was his first name, and my name's Charles, was under the ministry of Sister Amy Simple McPherson, you know, the founder of Foursquare. And Dr. Hollis was very strong on Bible prophecy, on end times, on the rapture, on Ezekiel and the book of Revelation. And our Sunday evening services growing up was all about Bible prophecy and the return of Jesus Christ. So let's talk about the return of Jesus. You don't hear that hardly at all anymore. You know, and it used to be, you know, the bumper stickers and everything and talking about rapture. What's happened within the teaching of the church regarding that issue?
Well, you know, I personally think that the pre-trib rapture is the reality. I think the evidence is in the favor that Jesus is going to, there's an imminent, it's a signless event. There's nothing standing in the way of that happening. We don't need some prophecy to find fulfillment prior. The only thing standing in the way of that is for the Heavenly Father to say to his son, "Go get your bride, go fetch your bride." And I believe Jesus is yearning to do that. He's been preparing places for his bride, we're told in John 14, for 2,000 years now, right? But the minute he hears, "Go fetch your bride," he's going to come, and there won't be a split second because it happens in the twinkling of an eye, that we are united with him to be with him together forever. But throughout, you know, Hal Lindsey came out pretty strong in the 70s with his late Great Planet Earth book, got a lot of people excited about Bible prophecy. But, you know, the rapture didn't happen, you know. Well, Paul was looking for the rapture 2,000 years ago. We're 2,000 years closer than when Paul was, and now we're 40 years closer or 50 years closer than when Hal Lindsey was. But it doesn't change the fact that when the Heavenly Father says, "Go get your bride," that'll Christ will come. But, you know, in the interim period, we've got different theories now of the timing of the rapture. Some people just flat out ignore the potential for a rapture, where it's pretty clear in the Bible that, you know, Jesus is going to come in the clouds in the twinkling of an eye with the sound of a trumpet, the shout of an archangel. And the dead in Christ will rise first, will be caught up in the air to be together with the Lord forever. That's in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, with more information in 1 Corinthians 15, that says, Paul tells us a mystery, that we shall not all sleep, meaning dying as believers, but a whole generation, says, well, we shall all be changed in the twinkling of an eye. So more details about the rapture is when we get our new bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But these things are abundantly clear. So some people think, well, this happens in the middle of the tribulation, you know, the seven-year tribulation period. Pre-trib raptures believe it happens before the tribulation period. Then there's the post-tribbers who believe it happens at the end. It's sort of a bungee cord jump. Christ comes down, gets us, bungee cords us back up. We have a sack lunch for the wedding supper, and then then we come back to, you know, co-reign with him.
Right.
And then there's the pan-trib theory, which is they don't worry about it at all. It's going to pan out.
It'll all pan out, right.
And I just tell people, you know, I'm pre-trib rapture believer. I'm so pre-trib, I don't buy post-toasties. I don't buy green bananas. And when the event happens, we'll just explain it to all the post-tribbers on the way up.
Exactly. So what should that mean for our listeners when we talk about the rapture? What does the Lord want us to do with that information, or with that mindset that Jesus could come at any time?
Well, Chuck, and the reality is even more so than ever before, because we're seeing so many end times biblical prophecies start to align. The stage is really set for all the prophecies to start finding fulfillment soon and sequentially, which means Jesus is going to come get us, and we could experience some biblical prophecies. We won't necessarily experience the wrath of God that comes out in the tribulation period, but there are some prophecies that could happen. I call them now prophecies at the present time. Arab-Israeli conflict in Psalm 83, destruction of Damascus in Isaiah 17, and there's many of them. So as we see, it's kind of the example is used like when, you know, when you go to the mall and you see the Christmas decorations going on. You know that Thanksgiving is just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start to see all these signs developing of the end times, it says, hey, we're moving towards the second coming of Christ. He's coming real soon to touch down on the earth and to judge, you know, destroy the Antichrist and judge Christ rejecting humanity in the second coming. What about the rapture? When is he going to get us out of here before? So it'd be like Christmas is his second coming and Thanksgiving is the rapture getting us out. So mm-hmm. we see the signs. The mall's all decorated for Christmas. So Thanksgiving must be near, and that means we should be called to godly living, holy living, and evangelism to redeem the time. Because once we're gone, we're not effective to the ones we love, the lost man, or especially our family members. And all of your listeners have that person in their life, be it their spouse or their child or their family member, friend, or neighbor, or someone in their workplace or sphere of influence that they know does not know the Lord yet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we put forward at Prophecy Depot is, well, what happens after the rapture? Because it's bad, Chuck.
Yeah.
I mean, bad things happen. You know, a lot of death and persecution of martyred believers and things like that. So, and plus, the choice to choose Christ then, when there's supernatural deception, it's not a popular choice, and it's a costly choice, because you hear about most everybody's being martyred for their faith after that period of time.
Yeah.
In that period of time. So we're trying to let people know, don't take that chance.
Amen.
Accept the Lord right now.
Yeah. If someone wants to reach out to you or to get more information about your ministry, how do they do that?
Well, they might have to find me in the clouds if the rapture happens.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah. How about right now?
Oh, if we're not raptured
yeah.
yet?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Well, they can go to my website, which is prophecydepot.com. Prophecy Depot, like Home Depot. We've got a free newsletter that we pass out. We've got a daily news blog. We put all the current events going on from a prophetic perspective, media shows on modern things like that. So prophecydepot.com.
Okay. Well, Bill, I want to thank you for joining me today on Heart of the City. I appreciate the your story, and I also appreciate the good word that you just shared with us. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to this 820 AM The Word special, Heart of the City. For more information on how your pastor or your ministry can be featured on 820 AM The Word, call Chuck Olmstead, 206-269-6216, or go to thewordseattle.com.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.